We got one more guest here for this Tuesday edition of the program. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Well, we've got a couple weeks of college in the books and a week of NFL in the books. It's now officially football season.
Yes, it definitely is. And I got to say here, as I was going through my power ratings for week three, and as I was kind of looking over this NFL card for week two, these are the 2 weeks that probably concern me the most in these respective leagues, because you don't get that week one to week two overreaction in college football. You get it now in week three. And week two of the NFL, I mean, you know, who knows what we may get from some of these teams here this week. You kind of feeling the same way, or are you pretty confident with where you're at?
Yeah, college, I had a poor week in college, so that's a rarity for me in week two. Made some wrong decisions, leaving the wrong teams off, but that happens. I feel pretty good. I like the adjustments in college, and I think now I get into my strength these weeks three, four, first couple weeks of conference play, where the public is overreacting because of the strength of schedule and the type of game that was played versus the competition they have for the upcoming weeks.
So as we look around here, and I do notice that, of course, some of the sides that I was a little bit too scared to play yesterday kind of moving in the direction I expected them to. So that's a little bit disappointing. But in terms of the adjustments that you made, Rolf, from week two to week three, who were some of the biggest movers for you, either up or down?
Well, I moved USC and UM Monroe up three. I think what we saw of USC is legit. You know, people all thought JT Daniels, and people thought Sears transferred out, and people thought this USC offense is going to struggle. But I'll tell you what, he's the real deal. He might have only been a three-star coming out of high school, but USC has no concerns in my book. I was excited the way they finally let their offense go. Clay Helton had no part of calling the plays. It was very obvious. They didn't take their foot off the gas, and they impressed. You know, my teams that went down three, I have four of them. Florida State, who I now have down 6 points. I moved three the week before in their loss to Boise. I moved three more in their one-point win. I have UMass down three. They keep moving down as being the worst team. I have Stanford down three. You know, even if KJ Costello's back, this is a team that was outgained last year. I mentioned that before. 9 or 10 wins on the season, but they were outgained. Now without their left tackle going into UCF, I think they're going to struggle this week. And, of course, I have UCLA down three more, you know, after their horrid performance against San Diego State. So on the year, I have Tennessee down seven from my openers, Florida State down six, UCLA down five, FIU down 4.5, Stanford and Nebraska down four. On the positives, Wisconsin plus five, SMU and Maryland plus 4.5, North Carolina plus four, UCF, Oregon, and Georgia State plus 3.5.
Yeah, that sounds like it's fairly in the same range of what I've kind of been looking at here as well. And, you know, there are a few teams. I've actually moved North Carolina up 6 points here so far this season. I think that's one where we do have a little bit of a difference of opinion, but as far as moving teams down, you and I are mostly in the same boat there. And, you know, what's really difficult is, and I'll use FIU as an example because we talked about them on yesterday's show too. You know, this is a team that we expected to be pretty good. This is a team that we expected to come out and play well. They were returning so much of last year's production. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't happened. And those are the challenging ones to me. You know, if you've got to move a team down that lost a whole bunch from last year, and it winds up being more of a problem than you originally thought, that's one thing. If it's a team that brought back most of its personnel, not a whole lot of coaching turnover, and they're bad, that's another thing. I think those are the most difficult ones to try and figure out.
Well, I did watch the FIU Western Kentucky game. I actually had a play on the over and lost that. And yeah, I'll mention my losers as well. That was an ugly total. But James Morgan did get hurt in the first quarter. So, you know, they went to Kalen Wiggins, who cannot throw the ball. He's a running quarterback. He was 2 of 6. They were totally inept. Now, yes, you know, I take the Morgan injury into effect. He's questionable this week. We'll see if he comes back. But this was also the same offense that was at Tulane and only put up 16 first downs and 267 yards. So there's more to the offense that is just James Morgan's injury. But again, that's one of those with an asterisk that you have to keep an eye back. If Morgan comes back and healthy, You know, we'll see what the offense does. If it's Kalen Wiggins, FIU is going to be in for some low-scoring games.
Well, and there are a few other teams we'll talk about here from an adjustment standpoint, because I want to look at a couple of games specifically involving West Virginia and Maryland, a couple of teams I'm sure have moved for both of us here. But, you know, just in general here, Rolf, I mean, I've noticed that my power ratings in week two were pretty good. You know, a lot of games moved towards my numbers. I was close on a lot of games. Here this week, I notice I've got more games where I'm, you know, 6-7 points off of the market than I had in week two. I don't know if that's the case for you or not, but, you know, should that concern me that I've got more games where I've got a much larger overlay in week three?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, Adam. I don't. I have fewer games. I only have a handful of games that even got to the 6-point range. My biggest one is Stanford and UCF. I'll just share that with our listeners. You know, that's you know when we answer that, Adam, is after week three, and we see where did those games finish closer to your power ratings, or did those finish closer to the Vegas number? And then until that point, no one knows what the right answer is. Is it good or is it bad? After week three, you'll go back, you'll make your adjustments, and you'll look. Yeah, I was this far off this week, and I was wrong. Perhaps I need to move them what I would normally move them, plus a little bit more because I was off on the market. Or you pat yourself on the back. Wow, out of these six games that I had a touchdown or more off, I went 5-1 or 4-2. I did a nice job. Let me look at the two games I lost and what I'm going to do from there. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
And I think it's one of those weeks, too, where, you know, we have – virtually no marquee games here this week, except for, I mean, really Iowa and Iowa State, probably the best of the games out there. And I mean, you wouldn't really think that with the history of those two programs. Obviously Iowa has been very consistent for a very long time. Iowa State was very much little brother in the state there for a while. Now Matt Campbell's kind of gotten that program going, but there are a lot of games here this week. You've got a lot of big numbers. You've got, you know, a Power Five team like Duke playing at Middle Tennessee, first non-Vanderbilt Power 5 team to go to Murfreesboro since 2011. You've got some big lines. You've got some very inconsistent types of teams, a TCU and Purdue, close line, but I don't know what I'm getting from either team. Texas Tech and Arizona, close line, don't know what I'm going to get from either team. Do you find that this is a tough week, or do you feel like you've got, you know, several positions already that you either have taken or are going to take?
Well, you know, I'm going to give myself a shameless plug here. I have my first 5% play of the year up, and I put it up at Wager Talk. Normally it's $40. It's $9. I'm going to keep it $9 today as an added bonus. For those that don't know, at Wager Talk, every package is $9. And then I left it up for $9. So if someone wants to try my top play of the week, that's available there. And UCF is another game I have. You know, I think what I've learned from previous seasons is this. I'm very conservative with totals weeks 1 and 2, but weeks 3 and 4, I think I really get a lot more value with totals because of misleading scores, because of pace of play, because teams, you know, because of the schedule teams played. Sized wise, you know, there could be, you know, it's looking up where I'm probably going to have 4 or 5 sides that make my card and a handful of totals as well. So to me, it looks like a deep card. You know, some of my numbers are off, some of the situations I love, but I also agree with you. Teams that have only played one game are so hard to judge, and that's TCU. I mean, listen, they played Arkansas Pine Bluff. Yeah, they put up 500 yards, 480 some yards, and won that game 39-7. But you want to talk about what you don't know is, you know, they played both Dugan and Delton at quarterback. And now you play one FCS team at home, you have a bye week, and now you're going on the road to a Big Ten opponent. Clearly, a lot of questions for those teams that have only played once this season.
Well, of course, that line moving because it looks like Elijah Sindelar may not play for Purdue. He threw for 500 yards last week, but in concussion protocol here this week. So that's why TCU from +2 to -2. And, of course, as we get, you know, some more clarity on what's up with Sindelar, maybe we'll see, you know, that line kind of swing back a little bit. But it's a similar thing for Iowa and Iowa State, and going off script a little bit here. But you talk about those teams with one data point. Iowa State has one data point, and it's not a good one because They went to what, triple overtime against Northern Iowa? Meanwhile, Iowa, a couple of decent data points for them, taking all the money here so far in early action. That's the thing. And we talk about this with college basketball a lot. And I think what, college basketball starts 8 weeks from today, I think I saw on Twitter. But you talk about that a lot early on in the season, the strength of schedule discrepancies and how much they play a role. So I imagine you've got some games that kind of fall into that category this week here too.
It is. You know, I'm not going to have a play in the Iowa-Iowa State game, but I will tell you this. You go back and look at what the Cyclones did. We know Northern Iowa, this is clearly big brother scenario. This FCS program is very good, has had success in the past. These are kids that wanted to go play for Iowa State or Iowa and are now playing at Northern Iowa. Cyclones did have a 463-yard edge, and Purdy was 30 of 41 with two TDs and no interceptions. They just struggled to run the ball. Matt Campbell, in an article I read yesterday, says his favorite part of an entire season schedule is having a week two bye. This goes back to his Mount Union days. He says he will get more done with his team having played one game, having the bye game in before Iowa, that he is absolutely thrilled to be playing this game. Now, yes, Iowa had an easy time, but they still had to prepare for their Big Ten opener against Rutgers. You know, Rutgers came off that massive week one win. Iowa couldn't go into last week relaxing and saying, hey, let's split reps between Rutgers and Iowa State, where they had to prep for that conference opener. Iowa State, for 2 weeks after that Northern Iowa game, phew, we won the game. Let's look. We've got 14 days to Iowa. What can we do?
Well, and there are some strange situational spots here this week. There were some last week as well. Some teams playing a conference game, then all of a sudden stepping down and playing an FCS team or a really low group of five team. Then next week they get back into conference play. So some situational spots worth considering. And again, a situational spot is never the sole justification for a play. But I think if it strengthens your position or gets you potentially off of a position, you know, those are things that you want to factor in the equation as far as situational spots go.
You know, absolutely. And let me give you an example of where a situational spot completely changed. If at the beginning of the season you were looking at the Pitt Panthers, you would say they open up with a conference home opener against Virginia. Week three, they go on the road to Penn State. Ohio is clearly a sandwich game that they're going to look past. Well, since Pitt lost to Virginia and they have Penn State on deck, all of a sudden, that Ohio game has a complete different focus where the Pitt Panthers and Pat Narduzzi don't want to start 0-2. What do? They go out against Ohio. They have a 481-212 edge. So it's funny how situational spots change from 1 week to the other depending on those results.
All right, so let's take a look at three games here in the college football card that I wanted to touch on with you here. And coincidentally, they're at the top of the rotation order for Saturday, starting with game 109-110, Ohio State and Indiana. Now, we know Ohio State has struggled with Indiana in the past. They've created some margin by the end of the game. They have had some issues in the first half in a handful of their games here against Indiana this decade. They're up from 14 to 15 and a half. I know I adjusted Ohio State up after last week's performance. A lot of people seem to do that. That's the question that you kind of have to ask yourself here is, is Ohio State that good? Did Cincinnati just have a bad week? You know, does it justify what we're seeing here with this line move against Indiana?
Well, I think the line move is justified. You know, Ohio State's defense has showed us that they're not going to be the defense that allowed 400 yards per game for the first time, I think, in the history of the school last year. And they are a legitimate defense. Yes, FAU and Cincinnati are not offensive powers, but, you know, the Lane Kiffin offense at FSU had moved the ball, and Cincinnati, you know, is Cincinnati. It's what you expect. I think for so many years that Ohio State just looked past Indiana. This is the lowest line in the series since 2014. So we've had 15, out of the last 15 years, I think 14 of the 15 were all three touchdown favorites or higher. So it's easy to look past that team. I don't think you look past them here in your first road game. Remember, people have trouble in Columbus getting tickets to Ohio State games. When you go and look at this Indiana game this Saturday, you're going to see at least 40% scarlet because the Ohio State fans can buy tickets to Indiana cheaper than they can in Columbus. It's worth the drive. It's a short drive, and you're going to have a huge home edge. Ohio State's won 23 straight in the series, but like you said, the Hoosiers have covered 7 out of 8. And, you know, you're talking a young quarterback now for Indiana. Yeah, Ramsey was the returning starter, but, you know, they decided to go with Penix, who's a lefty, who's a young quarterback, you know, and his first two defenses he faced, Ball State and Eastern Illinois, and yes, they put up a lot of yards, but again, neither of those are an issue. I actually like Ohio State. I mean, you're allowing 1.9 yards per carry on the season. You have 9 sacks in 2 games. I think Michael Penix is going to be in a little bit of trouble this week against the Ohio State defense.
Well, and what's always so interesting here about the early part of the college football season, and we'll look at Ohio State's, you know, resume specifically here, they beat up Florida Atlantic in the first quarter, then took a foot off the gas. They didn't want to show anything for that game against Cincinnati. They had the week one game won, basically 5 minutes into the game. Pretty much everybody knew that. Then Florida Atlantic goes out at home, gets decimated by Central Florida last week. Cincinnati, you know, nice win over UCLA in week one, didn't play particularly great, but still came away with the win and the relatively easy cover there, then blown out by Ohio State. So people really dropped UCLA down quite a bit because of their performances and also what happened in the Cincinnati game against the Buckeyes. So that's one of the things that's challenging about this early part of the year is that we start grading these teams and regrading their performances based on what happens to their previous opponents, you know, when they step up in class or something like that. So that's a challenge here at this time of the year too.
Yeah. You know, just a note, you know, how do you judge defenses? You know, you look at what the stats are, and then you look at what a team's offense is, and, you know, the adjusted defenses you see on the ESPN FPI or some of the other college football websites. But just to note, when we get into weeks 4 and 5 of the season, one of my favorite stats for judging offenses and defenses is above or below the average of what the opponents have. And this is something going back to the Phil Steele days that, you know, Phil has on his website where it shows the yardage, it shows the yardage in the game and how much above or below the season average of that team has. And that number always changes and adjusts because obviously a team's average changes. But it's something to gauge on when you have trouble defining strength of schedule. Well, this team played an FCS team and this played this and this and this. When you're judging a team against what a team does year to date on their averages, I think it gives you a very true test of how well or poorly that team played.
All right, so we go to game 113-114 here, NC State and West Virginia. And I think this game is kind of handicapping 201. You know, we get handicapping 101. It's a very simple, you know, very straightforward handicap. I think this game is anything but, because I've been very impressed with North Carolina State here so far. In fact, I moved them up 4 points in my power ratings because I was worried about what they lost from last season, losing Ryan Finley, lost a 1,000-yard rusher, lost a 1,000-yard receiver. They lost some big things. Now, it may be crazy to move them up 4 points because they've played East Carolina and Western Carolina, and they've won those two games combined 75-6. Now, it hasn't been a good look for West Virginia, but James Madison is a great FCS team, and Missouri is a top 20, you know, maybe borderline top 15 power-rated team for a lot of people out there. So this is a hard handicap to me where I want to believe in what NC State has done, and I'm doing that with my power ratings adjustment. Also, they really haven't played anybody that West Virginia has played here so far, and they're laying about a touchdown in Morgantown.
Yeah, this really is. I agree with you. This is a watch and learn game. It's a game I'm not going to have a play on. How often do you see teams with only 9 returning starters come back with a new head coach in the Neil Brown era? You've seen an offense that in 2 games has had 26 first downs, 13 first downs against James Madison, 13 first downs at Missouri. But again, can Matthew McKay do what he did those first 2 games? I mean, he's completed 67% completions. He has two touchdowns. I'm not worried about no interceptions. I'm impressed. And it's so hard to gauge a quarterback when your team is rushing for 250 yards per game and 6.0 yards per carry. If you have an offensive line and you can rush for 250 yards per game and 6.0 yards per carry, I could be a quarterback and complete 60% because it's just not a fair assessment. Obviously, the West Virginia defense, be it not good this year, is certainly better than East Carolina and West Carolina. And I'll bring it up again. These quarterbacks making first road starts, yeah, we saw some true freshmen do it week one. It's not an easy thing to do. We saw Bo Nix come back to being a very mediocre quarterback last week. We saw the Boise quarterback struggle against Marshall in that situation. And now you have a young quarterback in Matthew McKay making a first road start. It's something you clearly have to keep your eye on. Again, I won't be on either side in this game, but I would certainly lean with NC State just because my preseason numbers have them as a play still, but it'll be wait and see for me.
And the really interesting thing for me, and this is probably a sign that I was wrong on both of these teams. I upgraded NC State 4 points going into this week, as I mentioned already. I downgraded West Virginia 3 points coming into this week. And now I'm right on the number of 6.5. So that's a sign to me that I probably didn't have either one of those teams accurately rated. Maybe I'm overreacting to what NC State has done in the first couple of weeks of the season here, but I clearly didn't downgrade West Virginia enough. And that's the hard part. You know, I mean, they had a kid in Austin Kendall who just had to sit there behind, you know, guys like what, like Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You're not going to beat those guys out for the job. So you figure he goes to West Virginia, he's got some untapped potential. We haven't seen it here yet so far. So yeah, that's part of the challenge of handicapping early season college football is, you know, what you think may not work out, and then it's how you react to it.
Adam, excuse me 1 second. How much have you moved NC State?
I moved them up 4 points.
I've only moved them up a half. You know, I look at what they did week one against East Carolina. You know, you only had a 23-18 first down edge. You won the game 34-6. And, you know, you were laying a fair number. I don't remember the top of my head. I think you were laying 18 and you won the game by 28, but you were plus two turnovers. And the next week you're laying 41 to West Carolina. You win the game 41-0. I didn't adjust them at all. So, you know, despite me still having them higher, it just goes to show you two different people's point of views. That's a 4-point difference in the power ratings for us both looking at NC State.
All right. So I do want to touch on this game here. Game 115, 116, Maryland and Temple. And I'm a little bit upset with myself. I didn't play the 8.5 yesterday. My number on this game is actually 5.5. So right now I still do have some value around the key numbers to take Temple plus 7.5. I don't know what to do with Maryland. You know, you blow out Howard, that's one thing. You blow out Syracuse, that's clearly another. Now, that line did move very heavily on the Maryland side. They scored 63 points. They've scored, 142 points in two games here. But I'm not as impressed as maybe I should be. I think that was more of a commentary on how far Syracuse has fallen this season. So where do you have this number, and what do you think of the Terrapins so far?
I can tell you that Maryland's game last week was one of the games that I was very upset that I left off. And I left it off because of the line move. I mean, the line jumped, 5 points from Syracuse being favored to Maryland, at least 4 points. But, excuse me, Syracuse was the most fake top 25 team I've ever seen. My power ratings, I think I have them 55. Yes, they're going to win 9 or 10 games because they have the easiest Power 5 schedule out of every team in the Power 5. But being in that situation, that was one of the games that I'm very upset I left back. I do believe in Maryland. You know, Mike Locksley was always a good offensive coordinator, you know, and I think in the situation he is in, with having the Virginia Tech transfer, Josh Jackson, having the experience back there with Josh Jackson, yeah, he takes some shots, and he might only be completing 58%. But, you know, that's because he throws the ball downfield a lot. A 7-1 ratio to start, a defense that you know, gave up 400 yards to Syracuse, but, you know, they allowed 330 yards passing, and they only allowed 18 first downs. There were so many garbage yards in that game that, you know, I make my adjustment from that. I do like Maryland. I lean with Maryland. I don't like them now with where the line has gone. Originally, it was a situation I liked. You have to remember that Temple plays in LP Field, not LP Field, Lincoln Financial. Is that Philadelphia's field?
It is, yes.
And it's a game that they're excited to play. Anytime you make a road trip, you're going to have as many fans as Temple is. You're playing in an NFL stadium. These young kids get excited for that. These young kids like playing in NFL stadiums. They go in. It's something they watch growing up, being from that area, being from that Philly, Maryland area. And again, we're looking at a situation now. Temple is just like TCU. What do you make of them? You played one FCS team. You scored 50-plus points. You won the game 56-12. You know, but you're still a team that lost your key players last year, you know, especially on defense. And I think that's going to have a substantial edge for him. I do like the Maryland Terps this season moving forward.
And I think maybe that's one of the things I kind of overlooked a little bit about this game, the fact that it's not going to be a full-fledged home field advantage for Temple. And based on my home field formula, I do have Temple with a 3.5-point home field edge in most games. This is one where I probably should have taken the time to adjust that number down, because this will be certainly a more split crowd. If I adjust that number down, I wind up being closer to the number that's out there. So maybe it is a good thing, you know, to do this type of show, to be able to organize your thoughts a little bit better. So I probably should downgrade Temple's HFA a little bit here, which does bring me closer to the numbers. So I'm glad you caught that. I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'm glad it's something that I can make an adjustment on here, you know, before I wind up tying myself to a Temple ticket with a little bit of an overlay here in this game. But Rolf, before we move on to the NFL, anything else on the Saturday card that you're kind of interested in? I know we bounced around a little bit before we started talking about the three games specifically, but anything else that's kind of on your radar here?
Well, you know, a couple of things I want to mention. You know, I tweet this out each week, but I think it's important for people to remember some teams that may be overvalued this week or even next week. I just want to mention the teams that won their game outright but were outgained, so you could find some value in these situations. Wyoming beat Texas State 23-14. Wyoming was outgained 444 to 293, a negative 151 yards. North Carolina was outgained against Miami by 99 yards. BYU outgained to Tennessee by 79. Penn State was outgained against Buffalo. I heard a lot of people say, oh, we got to up Penn State's power ratings. They won 45-13 as a 30-point favorite. Well, they got outgained 429 to 357. App State, probably the most surprising, a 22.5-point favorite, gave up 526 yards to Charlotte, getting outgained 458 to 526. La Tech got outgained against Grambling, 455 to 390. Cal got outgained against Washington, 348 to 303. And Colorado, only a 5-yard edge in a 4-point game, but they got outgained 469 to 464 in that loss to Nebraska. Excuse me, Colorado.
Go ahead.
Colorado got outgained in the win to Nebraska in the overtime win.
That game, I was on Nebraska. I actually wound up with a -3.5 that was out there. I think it got down to as low as -3. That is a game I would like to never talk about again. I don't know how the hell that happens. The 96-yard flea flicker, I knew I was screwed from that point forward. I don't know how that happens. I have no idea how you're
my top play of the week as well. So,
like, you're so in control of that game. And quite frankly, it's probably a good segue into the NFL, because this is something that Brian Blessing and I ranted about for the first 10 or 15 minutes of our segment. These NFL coaches are a joke. The play calling sucks. The clock management sucks. The prevent defense, all it does is prevent you from covering and winning the game. It's hard enough to bet the NFL without these guys that have no clue what they're doing.
Yeah, it's sort of like Mac Brown taking a knee. Okay, well, you know, yeah, we've seen some interesting situations, and I agree with you. The differences on some of these teams from the first half to the second half is one thing, but when you're watching on TV and you're watching with a table of eight guys and everyone says the exact same thing and the coach doesn't realize it, you know that it's not just you, that it really is some stupid coaching moves.
Well, I mean, like I said in the previous segment, I mean, you've got kids that are probably going to fail out of college that are sitting around playing Madden in their dorm rooms and have a better idea of game theory and clock management than these head coaches. It's remarkable. I just, for the life of me, I can't figure it out. Kicking bad field goals, taking ill-advised timeouts, awful play calls. You know, even Sean Payton, you know, with some questionable decisions yesterday. You've got Drew Brees, you've got Alvin Kamara, you have all these weapons. And sometimes you just scratch your head about some of these calls. I mean, Mike Tomlin thoroughly outcoached in week one. I mean, just massively outcoached. It's crazy because, again, the NFL is hard enough to beat on its own without having to factor in these guys that just they wear tinfoil hats around on Sundays.
Yeah, the two minute drills seem to have gone out the window. Clock management seems to go out the window. Coaches don't know what to do on 1 and 2 point conversions. They have to look at their analytic charts. Coaching has become more and more of let's try to keep peace in the locker room and let's not worry and hurt the feelings of our players. Well, I tell you what, Bill Belichick doesn't worry about how his players feel, and that's part of the reason he's successful.
You know how you keep locker rooms happy? You win games. Everyone talks about all these great locker rooms and this chemistry and all this bullshit. You keep people happy by winning games and going to the playoffs and having a chance at winning a Super Bowl ring. That's how you keep guys happy. You know, I mean, all right, anyway. So going from week one to week two here, from a betting standpoint, as opposed to this rant I'm probably going to do every day on the week this or every day on the show this week, from a betting standpoint, what were your week one to week two takeaways?
Well, this isn't a surprise. And, you know, I think last week we talked about the Patriots defense with Bill Belichick being his own DC now for the first time in 4 years and calling his plays. We saw it in the preseason. We saw it week one. You get another veteran in AB going there. I upped the Patriots 3 points in my power ratings, and I made them 3 points clean of everyone else in the NFL right now. I just think they are the superior team. You know, we see the normal overreactions week one with Baltimore and Miami and, you know, looking at what those look ahead lines, but you know, we've seen some crazy, crazy line moves from the look aheads. New England was 11 last week at the Superbook when they posted their look aheads. Now we're seeing what, 18 or 18 and a half. It'll be the second largest away favorites role in the NFL since 1989. 20 is the highest, by the way. The Houston reaction was 6.5 points. That, the injury to Foles. Baltimore moved 4 points with their win against Miami when they're facing Arizona. And a game we'll talk about, I believe, the Bills. The Bills moved 3.5 points. And the Bengals. The Bengals moved 3.5 points. Bengals were +2.5 in the look-ahead line. Now they're the favorite. And I watched that Cincinnati game. You know, a new coach, I like watching at least a half of week one and getting a feel. I was impressed. I really did. I liked the Bengals. I mean, people had them down as a team that was automatically third in the North. And I really came away with it and said, man, Andy Dalton looks like a brand new quarterback this week with the new coaching staff. So, you know, obviously one game does not tell us, especially since they lost that game, but the Bengals probably impressed me as much as anyone besides the Patriots.
Yeah, the Bengals impressed me too. And I mean, they're going to be on my Super Contest and Circa Million cards here this week and quite possibly the Golden Nugget as well. I mean, Andy Dalton threw for 418 yards, and A.J. Green didn't even play. I mean, that's astonishing to me. And also, too, Cincinnati only gave up 2.9 yards per carry. They did a very good job against that Seattle running attack. you know, Russ did his thing and did just enough to win, of course, as he always seems to do. But Cincinnati's defense played well. Taylor likes his weapons at the skill positions. Again, the Bengals covered the number. Joe Mixon had 10 rushing yards and 17 total yards of offense, and they didn't have A.J. Green. I mean, that's a remarkable coaching performance and a remarkable Dalton performance, really, for Cincinnati. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to be on my cards here this week. And, you know, maybe I am overreacting to one game, but when you look at all the things that go in Cincinnati's favor regarding that one game, you know, it's still impressive. Of course, they had 400 and, you know, they had 400 passing yards and only managed 20 points. So I guess there's that. But, you know, still, it's it was a good showing for the Bengals, to be sure. I do want to ask you about this game here, Rolf. Game 263-264. And I'm going to mention this at the top so you can look up the stat if you don't have it already. But I mentioned in the first segment, teams coming off of NFL or coming off of overtime games in the NFL have not done well against the spread. So I do know that. I don't know if you have that stat in front of you. But the interesting thing here is that these two teams are both coming off of an overtime game. So it's obviously going to cancel it out in this game. But I was wondering if you had that stat for the other teams it's relevant for here this week.
I can tell you that teams off a tie are 4-10 against the spread. And yes, I will be able to tell you what they are if we talk for a few seconds.
Okay, we can do that. And you know, the tie thing makes sense because you wind up playing, you know, an extra 10 or 15 minutes of football. That's a lot. You know, it's an extra handful of plays for both teams. It's, you're basically playing an entire fifth quarter. So it does make sense that, you know, those teams do struggle that following week.
All right, Adam. Teams that
I put you on the spot. That's on me.
That's all right. I'm just looking up the database, so it's taking me a second. Teams that were at overtime at home and are at home again this week since 2010 have gone 10-25-3 against the spread, 28.6%. But how about this? Teams that were on the road in overtime and are on the road again this week, I don't know if that applies to anyone, have actually gone 28-19-2, 59.6% against the spread. So I think at home, when you're on the road, you're on the road, you're on the road again, you probably get a huge line overreaction. And those teams, again, 28-19-2 ATS, a pretty substantial situation. Totals-wise, those home teams that are home again that have a negative ATS record of 28.6% have gone 24-13-1 to the over, 65% to the over. That's really the only high over-under number there is in that group.
All right, so as far as this handicap here with the Chargers and the Lions, again, Chargers play, you know, they just get an extra drive in overtime. They go down the field and score, the game's over. But now they've got a long trip from L.A. to Detroit where they are laying a road number of 2.5 or some juice threes.
Well, let me make an adjustment to that statement. They, of course, still connected to the DeBartolos. They are actually practicing in Youngstown this week. So they are going from Tampa to Youngstown, will practice and stay in Youngstown all week, and then make the short trip down to Cincinnati to not do the double flight.
Okay. All right, so that's the situation there for San Francisco. What about this Chargers and Detroit game here where the Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite?
Oh, my bad. See, I'm listening to Chargers and thinking San Francisco in my head. My apologies.
Oh, good.
Folks, that's what happens when you get real, real old and it's football time and you're doing podcasts on Tuesday morning. My complete apologies, spazzing out on that. You know,
that's an excellent note because we think about teams going all the way back home, you know, San Francisco not going home, just going up to Youngstown. It's interesting too, because like you've got a situation here this week. New Orleans comes off Monday night and a dramatic win at that, plays the Rams, and then in week three they're at Seattle. So it's important to know if these teams are going back home, are going to be somewhere different, somewhere strange, somewhere new, something like that. So a good point. I mean, it was, you know, it's a happy accident, we'll call it. We'll channel Bob Ross here. Just call it a happy accident with that note about San Francisco.
I'm going to expand on that note one more time. I don't have any records on this. it happened a few times where teams have stayed out west or teams have stayed out east. But I do remembering reading about Hawaii football. When they used to play multiple games, they used to stay on the mainland on occasion if it's earlier in the year and school had just started or was previously starting. And often you read about the camaraderie and how teams bonded that week. And they're not going home to their families every night. It's not a work situation. They're staying in hotels or in a place where you are spending the entire week together. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if anyone's done an article on it, but a note to see what happens with San Fran this week. You know, as far as Detroit goes, again, Detroit was a team that, you know, moved the ball, but everything is with an asterisk. You have to remember that Arizona last year was outgained by 117 yards per game. That was the most in the NFL since 1999, the Browns' first year, I think, when they were back. So they were a historic bad team. So going to Arizona and having a 90-yard edge and having a 2 first-down edge is nothing that you really can hang your hat on. But this Charger team, to me, just does not look like the same team. You know, yes, you're missing Gordon. I'm not worried about him. But you're missing James on defense. You're missing an offensive lineman. Phillip Rivers looks older to me than he has in the past. And I have the Chargers as one of the top teams, you know, in the AFC. But their game against Indy did not impress me. I think I lean with Detroit in this game. I mean, the NFL still early in the week, so no strong statements for me in the NFL. But I think Detroit, you know, you have a tie, okay? For half the teams, you start the season with a tie. That's a detriment. But the Detroit Lions, even though you blew that lead, you come out of it, you haven't lost a game yet, now you have your home opener, your fans are still excited, you're probably going to have the noisiest crowd you're going to have. I think I'm going to back the Lions in this game.
That's interesting. You know, I wasn't overly impressed with what the Chargers did. I know they played very, very slowly. I know they had some big plays. Maybe they ran the football well at times. The thing about Detroit is it just, you know, we had that coaching rant at the top of the segment here. I don't know if I can trust Matt Patricia in really any type of situation here. You know, supposed to be this big defensive mind. New England hasn't missed a beat without him. They're probably better off without him this year with Belichick as the DC. I can't trust Patricia against any sort of competent team. And the Chargers look like a pretty competent team right now. So maybe one thing I can suggest here, I think Detroit could be a popular teaser candidate going from 2.5 up to 8.5 with a game where the total is getting a little bit higher, but it's still not that high at 48.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I like the Detroit D-line. I mean, yes, you're playing a rookie quarterback, but, you know, on the road to get 5 sacks, I think that could be the difference in the game. I think they're gonna get to Rivers 3 or 4 times, and when Rivers takes that many sacks in a game and he's getting pressured, he tends to get happy feet. So if the Detroit defensive line plays like I expect against a banged up Chargers O line, Lions can win the game.
All right, so one other game I wanted to tackle with you here, the Bills and the Giants. And I think this one's interesting. I think this one's kind of strange. I don't know if you've read anything about the situation for Buffalo. I presume they're just going home. But playing back-to-back games at the Meadowlands against different opponents is kind of weird. I don't know if that's ever happened before that I can remember, but they are right back there in New Jersey, this time taking on the Giants. Buffalo opened a 2.5-point favorite. It's kind of 2 pretty much market-wide now. Total up a tad to 43.5. Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah. The funny thing is the Bills have played more regular season games in Giant Stadium than the Giants have this year. I think it's an advantage. You know, I think it's being on the same sideline. I believe it happened once. Someone made a road trip back-to-back games, probably 3 or 4 years ago. And, for some reason, I do remember that exact scenario. But listen, color me impressed by the Bills defense. Yes, you're playing a young Jets defense, but you're playing a young Jets team, but they have Le'Veon Bell. To hold the Jets to 223 yards in week 1 And you say, well, Buffalo gave up 16 points. No, part of that was on a pick six. So they really only gave up one touchdown. I completely believe in this Bills defense. I like what the offense did. I like that they're going to a non-Bills type offense more often, where they're spreading out some of the receivers. I think it's giving Josh Allen not only more time to throw, but some rush lanes where he can take off and not feel like he's stuck in the pocket. I am on the Bills, so it's a situation where I do like them. I do have a weird stat to throw out last week. Since 2010, the Bills at one point were minus four turnovers, and that's why they were down 16-0 at the half. But since 2010, teams that were plus three turnovers in the game were 427-23-1. They won 94.9% of the game. That's the situation the Jets were in, and the Jets just found another way to lose, even though they were in a roll plus three turnovers. Again, only 23 teams and 451 times have lost being plus three turnovers. So, again, I think the Bills are the best defense in football, and I will be on them this week.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What do you guys got going on over there right now, man?
Well, we talked a lot about power ratings, and I do post my power ratings every Sunday. And I also post the entire power rating situation week by week. So you can see exactly how far I've gone up since the beginning, how much I make each adjustment for each week. You have the I post the first pitch for baseball, the gridiron guide for football. And again, a lot of neat systems and angles if you're following me on Twitter, at CalSportsLV. I don't really give my personal opinion on Twitter. I just like sharing gambling information to help people become better bettors.
Once again, that's Rolf Michaels over at wagertalk.com, at CalSportsLV on Twitter. Rolf, appreciate the time as always, man. I know you're a very, very busy guy doing a lot of shows. You got Gold Sheet stuff going on. You got a lot going on here on a weekly basis. So I appreciate that you take some time to join us, and looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Always a blast, Adam. Thank you.